Well, maybe there's some value in saying congratulations to the winners of the World Series, the Boston Red Sox. Sports go sports, but it's something to cheer for, something to look forward to. Much better narrative than, oh, how many people were killed just because they went to worship on the weekend? Who's receiving another bomb in the mail? Alleged. How about the guy in Fredericton going on a 60-day psychiatric assessment because, well, he is alleged to have murdered four people, but, you know, they have to sort out his mental state. Ugh. Man. Where's the joy in life? The joy in life is in Halloween candy? I don't know. Distractions. There are people who accuse using media as a singular. You know, the media. There are so many different things that come across our desk, and, you know, I've got to react to them. Oh, by the way, it's the Sheldon McLeod Show on News 95.7. Monday, October 29th, Matt Brand is the producer of our program. Matt Brand is here with us this afternoon. We're going to talk a little bit about what everyone else is talking about today. Stadium.
Ah, yes.
And we have to look into that. Moshe Landry's been on our show numerous times. He's been, well, at the forefront of these conversations. But said, hey, what should we look for, Moshe? He said if they show up and they don't have a check to pay for the stadium by themselves, then perhaps you might want to beware. There's this other thing, the tax increment financing. What is this? Do a quick Google search. What are you going to find out? That this is a practice that has been used many, many places on the planet. California, the first to come up with it, and that was in 1952. And in recent years, they've decided they never want to go down that path again. There have been lawsuits. There have been issues. There have been challenges. There's a suggestion that some of the, well, the city of Nashville has been growing through the use of this type of financing arrangement. Oh, I won't call it a scheme. That makes it sound like it's illegal. But they've decided, well, we have a number of businesses and development deals, and we have the same amount of infrastructure, and we have services, and we have taxes to pay for policing and fire and all of that. But these, well, I know the argument is, but it's found money. It's new money that we're not taking dollars out of the tax. Well, no, actually what we're doing is we're leveraging services and giving somebody an opportunity to own a building. Here was the analogy I drew. I don't know if this makes any sense. Maybe Moshe Lander will help me with this one. It'd be like me saying, hey, Matt Brand, I would gladly pay for the fuel, put tires, maybe even oil changes to look after a car that I might even use it to make money, you know, so I'll help the economy. But you buy me the car, you finance it for me, and I will gladly pay for the cost to keeping it on the road. Does that sound like a good deal?
It sounds like something like your parents do for you. They buy you a thing, and then you take care of it.
Yeah.
But then what happens if you don't have enough money to take care of it?
Oh, well, that'll be in the contract. And in that contract, it'll be yours, because you signed off on it anyway. I mean, that's kind of a cynical way to look at it. Do I think there's an opportunity for a stadium to bring, you know, an added level of excitement? I just said, I can see why people are into sports. Because it can bring something good to
distraction.
It's a happy distraction. It could be, unless your team loses. And then you can be happy and uniting against the other team and saying why they suck.
You can also recognize it's a distraction and still enjoy it.
Well, it can be both things. Absolutely. Is it a good investment? I don't think so. Here's the hard part, because it's not a what if. It's not an either or. It's not a for instance. Like, really? We can get a stadium built, but we can't get a doctor for everybody? I mean, it's not an equivalency. I'm not saying they're the same thing. But if we can get one and make that happen, why? Well, because, there's money involved. And I'm not trying to take anything away from this group that's bringing this proposal forward. Because, you know what? They're invested in the community. They could do this anywhere if they wanted to, really, if you think about it. But what struck me, I mean, the resolution that'll be coming before council tomorrow. I'm just trying to call it up here. That Halifax council direct the CAO, so Jacques Dubé, to, number one, complete a thorough business case analysis on a proposal for a stadium, including a stadium district development for Maritime Football League partnership. That was the group, obviously, we've been talking about. That was number one. Number two, engage with the province to obtain legislative amendments to the charter to allow for a tax agreement on a stadium. So again, the dollars would be not up front, maybe, and this would pay for itself kind of, through this tax incremental financing model, or otherwise, it says, pending the outcome of the business case analysis. Look into it. Engage, collaborate, and partner with the province. Oh, wait a minute. Does Stephen McNeil want to put any provincial... I thought he said he didn't want to put any money into it, but...
That's what he's on the record saying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but does that mean there are other ways to invest? You know, it used to be called corporate welfare if you're the Liberal opposition and the Tory government gives money to business, but it's an investment in Michelin when it happened last week to create jobs, and it's a payroll rebate. It's not corporate welfare. Number four, bring a report back to council detailing the results of the business case review. Of course, the business case review must include evaluations on the need, cost benefit, the risk, the economic impact, partnership opportunities, and current cost estimates. But Shannon Park is federal land.
Yeah.
So how does that complicate things? You know, would the private developers be purchasing it from the feds? I don't know. I don't know. Molasses kisses. Yuck.
What do you mean?
Distraction.
We're going to have lots of distractions on today's show. We're going to try to pick the best Halloween candy by poll.
Ooh, okay. So you said this is going to be like the U.S. college football thing, right? or basketball.
Yeah, like, I was thinking like a March Madness style brackets. This has nothing to do with stadiums, but it does have a lot to do with Halloween. Hmm. And just try to, you know, we'll do four polls today, two tomorrow, and then one on Halloween and determine a winner. If I thought of it earlier, we would have a lot more candy.
Well, I think it's just kind of like our weed spectacular. One day's enough. For Halloween candy, let's extend that. We'll extrapolate it over 3 days.
It's Halloween candy, so it's pretty important. It's so it'll be a three-day run.
Tis the season. We're going to talk about tourism. And maybe there's a case here to be made for a levy? There's been a discussion. Maybe we can add some money to the accommodations here in the city. There's a room levy, a room tax, or maybe an extra tax for people who take taxis to help pay for what? Well, the tourism industry is not happy. They're saying there's dollars being lost right now to Airbnb in an area that's not being regulated here in Nova Scotia. I'm talking about people who use Uber and go, they're great. Yeah, unless you're in a taxi business. The same as, hey, Airbnb is great. Unless, of course, you're in the hotel and accommodations industry. We're going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk to political scientist Laurie Turnbull back on the radio. We're going to talk about what happened over the weekend. And let's give full credit to Cecil Clark, one of the five people who wanted to be the leader of the Progressive Conservative Party after the first ballot. I know they're saying it was a first ballot win, but it was a first ballot concession that the others realized. Well, this is too big a hill to climb.
Yeah.
We're not going to make up all of those on a second ballot. So, that said, they all decided at the last possible moment, to say congratulations, Tim Houston. Tim Houston's going to be here with us in about 19 minutes or so. We're also going to be, as mentioned, talking to Stephen Schneider, criminologist from St. Mary's University. Why? Because, you know, say what you will about the Hells Angels, but they recognize an opportunity.
What do you mean?
Legal weed, man. Legal weed. Yeah, this is going to end the black market. Black market says not so quick. Let's start cutting prices.
Black market's got a few tricks up the old
sleeve.
Oh,
yeah. Edibles, because they're not legal either. So, hey, what's the difference? You're already in an illegal industry. You might as well double down, right?
Oh, geez. Who's making those edibles, though?
I don't know.
Do you know a guy?
I don't think they came with a label. That's true.
Okay.
I don't think they have the fat content, or is it keto friendly? I don't know. I have no idea. We'll follow up with Stephen Schneider a little later today. We're going to talk about a human rights inquiry. Closing statements coming tomorrow. Tressa Haney from Advocating Parents Nova Scotia will be joining us there. Also, what else? Oh, Chalkmaster Dave. We haven't had Chalkmaster Dave on the show for a while in his awesome sauce. He's been telling us that he wanted to paint an image of each and every lighthouse in Nova Scotia. And where is he at on that plan? Don't know, but we'll find out. He'll be on about 1:30, so about a little more than an hour, less than an hour from right now. More than an hour. Yeah, less than an hour. I can't tell time today. And Gabor Lukacs, air passenger rights advocate. Why? It's a pretty serious allegation that somebody who's involved in the airline industry, the government watchdog overseeing that, their spouse is, well, he says they're in bed with. No, they're married. So these two, a married couple, one works for the airline industry and the other is supposed to be, can they separate the church and state if they say, as they say? I don't know. I know Gabor was intrigued enough to write about this, so we'll get his take on that coming up. And we'll also talk about, Cape Breton call center workers. Call center workers who haven't been paid. The parent company is in a bankruptcy situation, and the manager I keep seeing on the news going, no, well, you'll get your money today, don't worry, and they'll sort out the pay by Friday. And how long will you work for free?
I probably wouldn't.
Yeah, that's the problem, right? Like, how do you continue paying the bills involved with getting to work and not getting paid for that work? Yeah, not good. So we'll talk a little bit. It's politics, but it's also a human story. A human story. All right. We'll talk stadiums and deferred tax revenue. Is that a better way to have taxpayer investment? Is there still a risk? Moshe Lander, he's with Concordia University, and he's our guest. That's coming up right after this break. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the broadcast here on this Monday. It is late October, and it certainly feels like football season for sure. As you read on HalifaxToday.ca, Halifax Mayor Mike Savage believes there are plenty of good reasons to build a stadium in HRM, but in order for the municipal government to contribute, it has to make financial sense. And Moshe Lander is joining us. He's back with us on the broadcast this afternoon. He's an economics professor who's worked with Dalhousie University along with Concordia. And Moshe Lander, welcome back to the show, sir. How are you?
I'm well, thanks.
The idea that we can somehow use or leverage this tax increment financing in order to, use new money, found money to pay for a stadium, the proposal with the new owners, the owners who pull this forward say, yeah, you know, we'll pay for the operating costs. We just need some help in financing the stadium. Is this a good idea for taxpayers?
No. Nice talking to you. So, no, it's not a good idea. This idea of, as you said, found money, it's just not true. It's never found money. So even if you want to give incremental property tax that's created by the stadium over to the ownership group to help pay for the stadium construction costs, what don't appear in the numbers is that any incremental business that's being created in and around Shannon Park is probably a business that's being destroyed somewhere else in greater Halifax area. So while it's true that there might be some brand new business that's created because of it, it's usually just moving, say, a bar that's now down at the harbor front over to Shannon Park, and then it's going to kind of exist alongside the stadium. So incremental tax revenue at Shannon Park, lost tax revenue down at the harbor front. It's usually just replacing one with another. And so it really is just a government subsidy by any other name.
We've got Moshe Lander here with us. And I wonder, staff was asked to, obviously look into this. And they report that I sent you a copy of, obviously put that went up on the website ahead of the a meeting that's happening tomorrow. With this, it will be a political decision. And the mayor, in a recent article, in a conversation he had with Todd Vino on the weekend on this radio signal, says that, you know, what's the return on investment on a library or roads or schools? What's the return on investment on rec centers? Can we put a dollar figure on cultural contribution?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of hard, though, as much as I love sports and I'm a sports fan, as much as I'm a sports economist, it's kind of hard to try and equate 9 football games a year with a library or with a school or with a hospital. So the idea that somehow these are equivalent ideas and let's throw kind of the business plan or the return on investment out the window, I think is more kind of an acknowledgement that if Halifax Region does put up money, they shouldn't expect to see it back. I think it's maybe just kind of preparing the taxpayer that whatever the economic benefits that are said in that city council report, it's just not going to materialize.
We keep hearing, okay, Lansdowne, there's the model. We'll have a Lansdowne. That'll be what Shannon Park will be to Halifax, now that we know that that's where the people involved with this bid are suggesting. Is the Lansdowne model a success? Is it the same? Or are we talking apples and oranges?
Yeah, it's not the success that everybody would think, and the comparison isn't quite the same. At least Lansdowne, to a certain extent, is reasonably accessible from kind of the main downtown core of Ottawa. Shannon Park continues to suffer from the basic plague that to get out there, you have to basically create a 1960s stadium mentality, which is where you put it on kind of the outskirts of town, You get everybody to drive out there for the game, and then you turn around and you get everybody to drive back. I don't care how many bus services you want to provide out to Shannon Park. The fact is that it's not a destination in its own right. So any incremental business that's created is not going to be long-lasting, especially when we're talking about something that's going to operate 9 days of the year. You can add in preseason, you can hope for postseason, but in an 18-game schedule, you're using it 9 times. Even in an optimistic scenario, you're going to use it, say, 2 weeks out of the year. So 50 weeks, it's standing idle. How much new business is going to be created there? It's not really the Lansdowne case at all, because you don't already have existing growth. It seems that the city just wants to be rid of this land. They wanted to use it for the Commonwealth Games. They wanted to use it for the Women's World Cup. They just want to find something to use that land with, because they have it and they don't have a better plan.
Moshe Landers here has mentioned he's an economist who studies sports and sports economies. Just a quick search of these TIFs, the TIF financing that we're hearing about. And California, where the model originated, apparently they've put a moratorium. They won't allow them any longer for legal reasons. And just reading another story out of Nashville saying that that model has helped the city grow. But what it's led to is that many of the municipal services are being subsidized by the rest of the tax base.
Yeah, I mean, again, at the end of the day, that tax revenue that would be generated, even in the city's best case scenario, is just tax revenue that's being moved from some other location, right? So businesses that would have relocated in one place now move out to there, and whatever tax money is being generated there is now committed to the stadium instead of being committed to roads or schools, hospitals, infrastructure, development of the airport or whatnot. So it really doesn't tend to work. It sounds good, and it alleviates the taxpayer's concern that somebody's writing one of those nice big phony checks that are, you know, oversized like a winner's check. That's what comes into the taxpayer's mind, is that somehow the city is going to hand over one of these nine-figure sums to a very deep-pocketed ownership group. And the idea then that this is some sort of TIF model at least alleviate some of their concern that it's actual money that's going. Hmm. They don't really see it go over.
So overall, we're going to hear a lot about this in the next couple of days, and council's going to have to decide. It will be a political decision. Staff's asked to come back with a report saying, you know, is it feasible? What's the taxpayer risk? So ultimately, if a $200 million stadium is built and the companies involved can't make a go of it, does that mean there's, you know, a pretty good chance we'll have another situation like they did in Manitoba with their arena? I'm not trying to poo-poo on this all of a sudden, but we've got to kind of look at this with a critical eye.
No, I think you're exactly right. That I think what needs to happen here is that the honest debate with the taxpayer has to be, look, how badly does the city want to see it franchise? What are the intangible benefits that you can't put money on? The fact is that the CFL, at best, has one more franchise in it, and that franchise should be Atlantic Canadian to make it a truly Canadian football league. So the status that comes with being one of those 10 cities might be worth spending $100 million that, if you recover any of that money, some of that money, part of that money, might be worth the investment of cementing Halifax as the true kind of capital of Atlantic Canada and the true tourist destination out of which all other stops should be based. So if the taxpayer is prepared for that, if the taxpayer is content to have that sort of idea, then, hey, the $100 million will be well spent, financial numbers be damned. But if it's going to be trying to portray as some sort of economic boom for Halifax, it's just not true. And I think that's kind of a dishonest tactic on the part of politicians that just has never shown itself to pay itself off.
Do we know what the state of the finances of the CFL are?
Never healthier. The numbers aren't publicly released because that would, of course, give players some sort of leverage in bargaining. But the fact is that you have 9 stable franchises. Anyone with a history of the CFL will remember kind of the coming and going of the Ottawa franchise. They're here one day, gone tomorrow. The Alouettes for a long time were gone. You have 9 stable franchises with proper ownership groups. You have stadiums that are relatively new in Hamilton and Toronto and Ottawa. It's in good shape. It probably does have the ability to support one more franchise. And you have a national TV deal. Every game is broadcast. American viewers are starting to pay attention to the CFL because there's the belief that it's less dangerous because of just the different rules that the CFL has than the NFL. Now's the time to do it.
Well, we'll have to wait to see what kind of conversation comes out of council tomorrow. I'm sure you'll be back with us to discuss your thoughts. Moshe, thank you again for taking some time out of your day to be on the show. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Talk to you next time.
Take care. Moshe Lander is his name. He's an economics professor at Concordia University. He's worked at Dalhousie as well, saying, is this a good deal for taxpayers? Nope. But this is ultimately the decision that the politicians will make, banking on whether it will get them reelected, unless, of course, they're not going to run for reoffice. That's a possibility as well. All right, well, lots on the go here this afternoon. We're going to pick up the conversation in just a few moments with the new leader of the Progressive Conservative Party, leader-elect Tim Houston. Gabor Lukacs, and he'll be talking aircrafts with us, or at least air passenger rights, and check in with the tourism industry about Airbnb and Chalkmaster Dave about painting pictures of lighthouses. That's all still to come on the broadcast. You're listening to the Sheldon McLeod Show. Don't forget our Twitter poll question of the day. If it's not up yet, it will be soon. It's all about the candy. We'll take a break and more of the Sheldon McLeod Show right after this.